This is James George Jameson of the Daily Bugle. Enjoy this podcast.
The Incomparable, number 450, March 2019.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I am your host, Jason Snell. On this episode, we're going to be talking about comics and also about Spider-Man, and also about, in an oblique way, the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse animated film from last year, because in the wake of that very excellent film, I thought it might be interesting to read some of the comics that kind of inspired the characters and some of the premise of the film. And so I assigned some homework. I assigned a couple of short runs of comics to my guests. The Edge of Spider-Verse miniseries, which among other things introduced Gwen Stacy, the Spider-Woman / Ghost Spider / Spider-Gwen, and also a series of issues from the Amazing Spider-Man comic from the 2014 edition, featuring the Spider-Verse event proper. There were also like a million other Spider-Verse tie-in comics that I did not assign that were entirely optional. Let me introduce the people who took up the challenge of reading some comics. Dan Morin took up the challenge. Hello, Dan Morin.
Hi, Jason. For more on this, see TV episode 534.
That's good. It's not really essential, but...
No, but it's a tie-in. It'll explain what I'm doing here.
It'll explain. Yeah, that's right. Dan and who he was before this episode. And now here is somebody who is not Tony, because he's from a parallel universe. It's Chip Sutterth. Hello.
Wallop and web snappers.
It's good. Here's somebody who's not Chip, because he's from a different parallel universe. It's Tony Sindelar. Hi, Tony.
Hi. I am actually a spider that was bitten by a radioactive Tony, and I have zero powers.
You have all of the powers of Tony Sindelar.
All the proportional powers of a Tony.
Yes. Which is slightly less than normal strength.
And he is probably from another parallel universe, too. It's Moises Chuyan. Hello.
I'm never going to forgive them for what they did to Miss Lyon.
You know, some of the things about this event that make me laugh are the bits where they go to ridiculous universes, like the original animated Spider-Man TV universe, and the characters there are very confused by these new Spider-Men who are there, and then I think many of them are horribly murdered. The Hostess Fruit Pie universe is visited
just with the Hostess Fruit Pie brand ripped off of it, because of, you know, they would have to ask Hostess, and Hostess
That's
would probably
fine.
Say
we would no, like to don't, use your don't, fruit pies don't. In a comic where people are horribly murdered. Yeah, that's a great idea. Comic book guy. No, we're not going to approve that one. Anyway, the idea here is that there was a miniseries about a bunch of different Spider-Man analogs from across the various multiverse universes teaming up because they face an existential threat from a bunch of, it's a kind of complicated, but like a family that eats spider people.
Yeah, I was like, how are you going to explain this?
Yeah,
Jason, it's a tale as old as time. A tale about like a family of Victorian space vampires that have infighting and travel across dimension eating spiders for reasons. We've all been there. It's very relatable, Jason.
We've all read all of the many comic books about Victorian soul-sucking vampires.
You know what? For the people that complain that comics tell the same stories over and over again, no. This
I
one
give
is very
you Spider-Verse.
Weird.
this one is very weird, and I love that some of the subtext in going back to the original animated series, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which is what I was referencing.
They killed all of the people in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. I loved that show.
They killed
show.
All of them, including the dog. Including the dog. They broke the rule and they killed the dog. And in doing so, Dan Slott accomplished what so many comic book writers have only been accused of. He literally killed some people's childhoods.
Yep. Yep.
I have to say, for me, the moment that made me laugh out loud while reading this was the segment where they basically, the Moreland tries to invade the comic strip, the newspaper comic strip.
The original newspaper strip.
Failing because they have to recap what happened in the last panel every single time. And as someone who grew up reading that in the newspaper and always being like, God, how is this Spider-Man so boring?
Why is Spider-Man just as boring as Dragon Ball? They killed it
from our newspaper, and frickin' John Updike brought it back.
That.
because he was such a fan. They're like, oh, John Updike likes it. We should put it back in the paper.
So that, I mean, that's we can talk about the Spider-Verse story. It is this very peculiar story that is spinning out of other spinning. It's like a web. Whatever. I don't know. I'm not even trying. It is spinning out of past Spider-Man stories about this idea of these elemental of the, you know, creatures that prey on the spiders throughout the multiverse. But let's be honest. It is an excuse to take a whole bunch of like riffs on Spider-Man or alternate Spider-Man characters created throughout the years and have them have a cool team up where they all are working together more or less to fight their, you know, the people who are out to get them. And I think that is the fun thing about the Edge of Spider-Verse miniseries, because it's leading into the Spider-Verse story, but it really is just sort of reveling in the fact that there are all of these other takes on Spider-Man out there. And that also then feeds into Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse, where this storyline per se doesn't happen, but the idea of taking some alternate spiders and putting them together and having them fight together against a common enemy is exactly what that movie is trying to do. So I think it's fun to talk about all of the different Spider-Men, right? Because for a very long time, Spider-Man was Spider-Man. It was Peter Parker. That was it. And then there have been some obscure comic book kind of other takes over the years. But in the last few years, there's definitely been an explosion of other Spider-Man takes. And I think surprisingly successful. I'm not quite sure why Spider-Man as a concept is so portable to different kinds of characters, but it has proven to be so in the last few years.
It's interesting too, because of the fact that, like, you know, like so many of these really long-lived superheroes, you run into these weird challenges with the main chronology, where it's like, if we were tracking Spider-Man and Peter Parker in kind of quote-unquote real time, he would be like in his 90s, right? Like, he would be pretty old. And, you know, the idea that, like, Spider-Man is kind of timeless in his story, right? He's always kind of perpetually a young man or teenager. Like, we don't really get the, like, you know, geriatric Spider-Man, as it were, like, you know, as the main sequence, even though, like, that character has been around for so long. So it allows you to experiment with different aspects of the character. I would argue Batman gets, like, you know, kind of similar. Like, there are definitely different takes
on
Batman.
Dan, but, can I interest you in a geriatric Spider-Man who raises a young Spider-Man in a techno post, you know, cyberpunk thing? I call it Spider-Man Beyond. Is that something you'd be interested in?
I'm in. I'm sold. Sign
okay.
Me up.
You don't have any money, do you?
Well, less than 10 minutes of Batman got mentioned, so I'm not surprised.
I didn't do it.
I want to bet.
At the core, the creation of the character, going back to what Lee and Ditko did, the basic template for who Peter Parker is a compelling, interesting person. He could be called something other than Peter Parker. He could be a different ethnicity. He could be a different gender. He could be from a totally different place. He doesn't have to be necessarily from that place. For the basic arc of the origin of the character and why Spider-Man does what Spider-Man does, catching thieves just like flies and so on. And that's what I think. It's interesting that this kind of explosion of Spider-Man options has only happened recently, where in the olden days, other versions of Spider-Man were effectively, oh, there's a cartoon. Oh, there's another cartoon. Oh, there's a what if where maybe he kept his six arms. There's another what if issue back in the glory days of what if. This is like saying, how about we have a multiverse. Why don't we just be comfortable with the fact that maybe there is a what if universe where Ben Reilly, the blonde haired clone, didn't die. And there's another one where Peter Parker and grows up, gets married to Mary Jane and has a daughter, and she becomes Spider-Girl. And let's lean into that, where even the Spider-Girl that I mentioned, who becomes a big part of the comic crossover, that character had a lengthy run.
Yes. Like 50 that issues series, of the, that Spider-Girl by Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz. Yeah.
And fans kept resurrecting it or fighting.
Exactly.
It.
Yeah. And it was almost like the company was like, well, this didn't really work. And the fans are like, no, it kind of worked. It kind of worked. It kind of counts. And the thing I love about this crossover and the movie that it inspired is that it's all about how all of those stories matter. All of them count. All of them matter to somebody. And that's something that gives this admittedly wacky, very comic booky here. Let's find a reverse engineered reason to make this setup that we want work. That's why it ends up working, because we actually care about these characters that, in the cases of as Jason was saying, the Edge of the Spider-Verse characters that are introduced and then become part of the crossover, they have their stakes. And in just a few panels, we care about Spider-Gwen. And that's why Spider-Gwen became this explosively popular character immediately.
Yeah, I don't understand. And I'm coming at this as somebody who has seen Into the Spider-Verse in the theaters 4 times and is forcing himself not to see it a 5th time. I don't understand.
Don't do that to yourself, Chip. Let yourself be happy.
I don't understand why this story in the comics works as well as it does, and it works so damn well. Before the movie came out, I'm not as active a comic book reader as I used to be. I was very much aware that there are all kinds of Spider-Man characters out there right now, all spider-derived characters, not even in the multiverse, in the comics. You've got Silk,
616.
you've got Silk, you've got Spider, you've got Spider-Woman, you've got another Spider-Girl, you've got Spider-Man 2099, you've got so many Spider characters. And I am enough of an old fart fan that I remember feeling really uncomfortable about the thought that Brian Michael Bendis was going to put Peter Parker in the Avengers. I was like, Spider-Man is a loner character. Spider-Man is a singular character, and ever more he should be. And
he's got homework to do. He doesn't have time for team-ups.
Yeah. And what does Jason make me read? He makes me read a sprawling crossover where there are hundreds of Spider-Men, and 616 Peter Parker is not just one of them. He's the prime one. He's actually the leader of a spider-freaking army. This is not the 1960s Spider-Man.
How do you feel about Otto Octavius's brain in Peter Parker's brain?
I was gonna ask about should we talk about how accessible or not accessible the Spider-Verse event is?
I think that's a perfectly good way of doing it. I mean, there is with any comic book crossover event, I think there's some to some degree
there's
you some just
baggage.
Have to kind of go with it, because there's almost nobody who is going to be able to have the complete, you know, prerequisites to do it. So you just kind of
don't exist. That human doesn't exist.
And honestly, there are so many. I mean, part of it is just like, do I need to know where Spider-Punk comes from? Suffice it to say, there's a Spider-Punk.
But that said, some of it, I mean, I think, for example, the setup with I vaguely knew about Superior Spider-Man and the background on that, but it's actually fairly critical, I think, you know, and certainly you can explain it kind of, right. You could give a one line explanation of it, but it does still tie in a lot with the ultimate sort of how are we, the structure of all of this and the character interplay and all of that. And as someone, you know, I basically spent a lot of time reading this with, you know, Wikipedia open in the other browser tab, being like, all right, what's the deal with this person? How long have they been around? Who is, what's their deal?
Yeah.
Friday night at Dan's house, a comic book and Wikipedia side by side.
A real party.
All right, let me take a break and tell you about our sponsor for this week's episode. It's Linode. Linode serves the incomparable and the whole company that I do and everything that I do. It's Linode, the whole thing. And for not very much money. With Linode, you too can instantly deploy and manage a server with SSD storage. Super fast, super easy in the Linode cloud. Get one running in just seconds. You choose the Linux distro, you choose the resources and node location. That's where the server lives. It's easy to administer from wherever you are using their web-based tools. I can't say enough positive. They're a sponsor, but they can't buy my endorsement. And I use Linode. I don't know where I would be without Linode. It doesn't matter if you're working on your first server or deploying a complex system. They are the people to go to. They've got the fastest hardware and network. Amazing customer support if you ever need help. I've used that occasionally over the last few years. They're super responsive, very friendly. It's so easy to launch a Linode cloud server, and they've got block storage now available in Newark, Fremont, Dallas, that's where my server is, Atlanta, Frankfurt, London, Singapore, and soon to be released in their Tokyo data center. Version 4 of Linode's RESTful API is out of beta and includes an officially supported Python CLI, and they're hiring. So if you want to learn more and check out what they're looking for, go to linode.com/careers. But if you want a server, I got it for you. Their plans start at 1 gig of RAM for $5 a month, plus there are high memory plans starting with 16 gigs of RAM. And because you listen to The Incomparable, you can go to linode.com/snell, my last name, use the promo code SNELL2019. That's like Spider-Man 2099. I'm SNELL2019. Anyway, to get $20 toward any Linode plan. And if you do the math, let's do it. Okay, $5 a month for the 1 gig server. Times 4 is 20. I get $20 by using the code SNELL2019 for free months of a Linode server on the 1 gig plan. And there's a 7-day money back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. Give it a try today. That's linode.com/snell, linode.com/snell, promo code SNELL2019, like Spider-Man 2099. To learn more, sign up and make the most of that $20 credit. Thank you to Linode for supporting The Incomparable.
Jason, I hate to put you on the spot very much, but I remember when they announced that they were putting Otto Octavius in Peter Parker's brain and effectively killing Peter. You were not thrilled about this.
Yes,
this was not something you were happy about.
I think
this is the mild way to say it.
I would say, though, that it is interesting. The ones that they assume you know when reading this event are the ones that are part of kind of mainline Amazing Spider-Man storylines from the last few years, not super obscure ones. And that Superior Spider-Man thing was, they basically stopped publishing Amazing Spider-Man for a couple of years and published Superior Spider-Man instead. And so Peter Parker was dead, comic book version of dead, which is not dead. And Otto Octavius, Dr. Octopus, was basically in his body and had vowed to basically be a better Spider-Man, which is an interesting storyline that I was not interested in reading, and stopped reading Spider-Man comics there. That was how that went. And so that's what is going on. So they have to explain that a little bit. I think there's an assumption there that more of the readers are going to understand that because that was a storyline from just a couple of years before.
It also involves a weird time travel.
Very weird time travel. Like, because how do you get him to team up as a part of this,
since he
was never simultaneous with the other Spider-Man? The answer is time travel, essentially.
After the end, if you go back and look at like the earlier episode where he returns from his brief thing, it's like the same panel where they're like, he's saying something like angrily at the people who have banished him, which at the time I'm sure made no sense to anybody reading
right. It
Jason, can we talk about totems?
Legally? No.
Yeah, I feel like the comic talked enough about totems for all time.
This is the weird thing. And so, like I said, I've been drifting away from comics, but as a J. Michael Straczynski fanboy, I was reading his run of Spider-Man very avidly, through the good days and the bad. And the conceit that really drove some fans crazy and had me going, oh, I like this, but I'm not sure it's sustainable. The conceit back that JMS set up there was that it wasn't the radioactivity of the spider that gave Peter Parker his powers, that there was something mystical involved with the spider, and the spider was trying to give Peter the powers before the radiation killed it, or something like that. And from there, he spins this story of
web.
He
any that, size.
Yeah.
You would say he was the master weaver of a...
Yeah. So Morlun, one of the inheritors in this story, is a JMS-created character. He's the only inheritor that ever showed up before this crossover. Over, and the whole thing it turns Spider-Man into a quasi mystical character there for a while until Dan Slott takes over and essentially ignores it all up until this stuff. Into the Spider-Verse, there's nothing mystical about it at all. It's, right. it's Kirby super science all over the place. But my primal Spider-Man is a scientific character. It's a radioactive spider kind of thing. And I was wondering what you all thought about all of this mystical mumbo-jumbo being layered onto Spider-Man in this storyline.
I mean, as someone who doesn't have like a lot, I like Spider-Man, and I know a decent amount about Spider-Man. I followed various incarnations, including the cartoon series back in the 90s, which was kind of my entry point. It doesn't bother me because I'm not as like entrenched in spider lore. And so I kind of was like, oh, this is a different take, right? It's a problem inherent with this medium where you have so many different creators often working on the same character and telling different stories, is that you're going to sort of weave in and out of various like
we're
going to
do this all night, guys.
It's going to happen. But like everybody's going to have a slightly different take. And at the end of the day, the question is, do you reconcile those? Do you ignore things? As you said, do you retcon things that people did before? To a certain extent, as a comics reader, you've got to be flexible, right? Because there's going to be takes where it's like, I don't really care for this, as yeah. Jason didn't for Superior Spider-Man, or there's going to be things that you really get into that other people don't like. So I think for me, as someone who views comics as like, I am never going to feel like prescriptive about like, this is what this comic's about. This is not about this. Like, everybody's got to have a chance to put their own sort of different cod spin, sorry, on it. And, you know, I think that's kind of inherent in the medium to a certain extent.
My short thing is that kind of like how Jason checked out during Superior Spider-Man, I was a big fan of the writer who came before Straczynski on Amazing, and just kind of checked out when the writers changed and missed all of this stuff as it was originally running, and only reread it later and never really cared for the whole mystical totem thing. But I was kind of like, eh, it's comic books. You know, I'll live. It'll disappear in 5 years and then
come back five more years
it'll come back 5 years later as a callback, and I'll have read it fine.
I think one of the joys of what Dan said about different writers with different takes on characters is if you wait long enough, as Moises said, you know, wait long enough and it'll change. So it's like,
yeah, the weather is all written in sand.
Yeah. You just don't like this take on the character. Just wait. And a different take will come along. What I like about Straczynski's story with the totems, and I actually would say that about a lot of the characters we see in the Spider-Verse movie and in this the miniseries, is it's all about like it's alternative takes on the character or the premise. And it's fun that in a medium that so often is like bogged down by continuity. I think continuity is the best and worst thing about comic books, because like it's really cool because we've created a shared universe and there's history and all of that, and yet it completely prevents you from telling stories of certain kinds because you are burdened by the continuity. And so my feeling about, like Joe Straczynski saying Spider-Man's actually this totemistic kind of character, was, oh, this is a version of this story I haven't seen before. And I liked it because it was novel, and I wasn't really offended by it for whatever reason, because it seemed like not the science Spider-Man that Chip was looking for. And then, of course, Superior Spider-Man, I was offended by, and I didn't want to read that story. So it depends on how it hits you. But for me, the idea that Joe Straczynski had was literally, what if I told you, and it's one of the characters tells Spider-Man this, what if I told you that spider didn't bite you accidentally, but that it was looking for you? It's like, whoa, I have never even thought of, Spider-Man's my favorite comic book character, and I'd literally never thought of that take on it. And that's the delight on it. Or what if Gwen Stacy got bitten by the spider instead? Mm-hmm. Like, that is a fun, let's explore that. Or with the Ultimate Universe, Ultimate Spider-Man was just a younger Peter Parker, but after 120 issues or whatever, Brian Michael Bendis killed Peter Parker and introduced Miles Morales, who is the main character of Into the Spider-Verse. And he also became very popular very quickly. So, you know, some of it is just, it's fun to have, you know, look, you sold me on Spider-Man. I've liked Spider-Man since he was on the Electric Company when I was 5 years old. But I like to see new visions of that character, and it could be a new version of Peter Parker, it could be something totally different, or it could just be a spin that's different. That's the good part of comics having the freedom to just do completely crazy stuff like this miniseries, is interesting things can fall out of it that are good stories, and I'm not as worried about the continuity or redefining my childhood or anything like that.
And after decades, you kind of need an opportunity to do that.
You have to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Otherwise,
Jason, I swear the interrogation will stop, but I...
Nope, this is this is like an intervention. I see now that this is one of those episodes.
intervention in the Spider-Verse.
Every 200 episodes or so, there is an intervention.
Jason, you should have looked up. There's a banner right over your head.
Swinging back around to things after time. I had to. It's now Dan's fault. I'm assigning blame.
Sure.
Initially, I wasn't there for what Straczynski did with this stuff, but revisiting it after I had read Spider-Verse, I got it and was into it and had a different appreciation for it. In some respect, because of the way that Dan Slott gave me a different angle to appreciate it, where initially it was I get it. All these Spider-Man stories have been told for 30 years. What twist are you going to come up with now? I initially, thought of it as gimmicky and didn't like it. And in retrospect now, through a different lens, I kind of like it a bit differently. Have you gone back and actually read Superior Spider-Man, and how do you feel about it now?
I've read some of it, and I don't love it. Because I just don't like that. I don't particularly like that take, which is funny because I think it's that I don't like that character, that I don't like Otto Octavius particularly.
They did a good job of making you hate Dr. Octopus.
And it's funny because, again, we're talking about this is all about like alternate characters is essentially the meta version of what this episode is about. I really liked there was a run of essentially Iron Man recently that is basically the Iron Man equivalent of Superior Spider-Man, and it's Dr. Doom is Iron Man. And I loved that because I do like the idea of a villain deciding he should be a hero and having to deal with his past, which Superior Spider-Man isn't as much about, but also like trying to be a better hero than the sort of arrogance of like, I could be a better hero than these stupid heroes. Watch me. And I think that's a fun idea. Superior Spider-Man, I think just kind of clanks off of me because I don't particularly like that character. And he's kind of trying to insult Peter Parker and improve his life. And he's really annoying and arrogant. And I don't know, it's a hard character to like. But, I just said that I liked watching Dr. Doom try to be a good guy. And Dr. Doom is also awful.
You remember that time Joker was Batman? That
was super weird. So yeah, I like this comic miniseries because it provides even Jason, who so hates the Superior Spider-Man, an opportunity to appreciate a particular implementation of that alternate version of the character.
He just likes that one panel where 616 Spider-Man punches him and says, "I'm the Superior Spider-Man."
That was so gratifying. Like it paid off so much torturous, horrible stuff that Dan Slott did to us for a couple of years.
One other thing that this series does is economically, you get all of these different variations of Spider-Man. They do all manage to have different personalities and different even little story arcs going on. Mm-hmm. The writers, Slott, Christos Gage does some of them, they get down to these characters really, really well. Gwen Stacy's the breakout character here, which is really impressive considering she died in the 70s. But whenever two or more spider characters meet, they are definitely not the same character, and they're definitely not delivering the same lines.
It's not all Peter Parker, too, which is good, right? That would be, if it's like 80 different Peter Parkers, would be super boring.
Seems like maybe a lot of those got picked off really fast, right? Because it's not super crowded with Peter Parkers.
I mean, like clones is like a subset.
Yeah.
It's like, here's the clone section.
Well, they literally set up the team of clones to go off and do team clone stuff
force
for a minute.
Yeah,
Clone
there
Force.
Are what I would consider a surprising number of spider meetings in this comic, this epic end of the universe, everything. There are a lot of meetings along the way to saving the end of the universe. And there are and even a surprising number of small meetings that seem to happen during combat. But I would say the voice that each different spider person has really makes those probably more interesting than they deserve to be, because they're fun. It's fun watching a panel with like 8 Spider-Men kind of argue with each other, so let's figure out what their plan is.
Try to figure out which one is which, though. Yeah. Sometimes it's like different
costume.
I
have to say, I think there's even a bunch where they're kind of like almost these crowded shots, and like I can't even really tell exactly which version of the spider costume somebody in the background is saying, but like they're saying in something that sounds like, oh, that's meant to be read in a British accent. That's UK Spider-Man, as opposed to Punk Spider-Man or Spider-Punk, if you will.
Spider-Man India.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because I'm coming off of the movie. I think that one of the most underserved spider characters in this thing was Miles.
Yes, I was gonna mention. I'm surprised we didn't get to it earlier. I think if you saw the movie and then went out and bought the Spider-Verse comic, you would be real, real disappointed. Because at least in the main collection, he is basically not in it. In the event,
he's mostly relegated to the Spider-Verse team-up book, which of all of the tie-in books to the event was definitely the one that sold the least.
Yeah, it's tricky too because like that's an hour and a half, 2 hour story, right? Like you could not cram. They had to like pick and choose to a certain extent, and they wanted to focus on Miles. And so, you know, obviously, yeah, I agree, he's not served very well. I will say, versus the differences, there's one little standalone story in one of the, I think it's in maybe the second team up one or something like that, where it's the two Spider-Men who are out of like, they're out of their web fluid and they like are like kind of hiding behind a wall and reloading. And they're just having a chat about like how similar or different they are. And one of them's like, oh, you got like Uncle Ben dead, check. This happened. Yep. That happened. And they're like, yeah, I guess we won't really know what the little difference is. And then there's just a shot. It's not really like, it's, you know, foregrounded, but not really explained. And like one of them's wearing a wedding ring and one of them isn't. And that's it. And then they go back to the fight. And it's like, it was kind of a nice little moment of talking about all these different characters who are fundamentally the same people, but different things have happened to them along the way and has colored their outlook in some way.
For the joy of the little in references and that sort of thing, that's one of the reasons that I would say that it's fine to go through the comics, I think, reading the main crucial event issues. But even then, depending on how you're reading, like if you're reading on Marvel Unlimited, it doesn't necessarily sequence things exactly the right way, or you may miss something.
Every time I saw a printed checklist on the back page, I was like, okay, what's the next one? Because I do not trust you, Marvel Unlimited.
One of those is wrong too, though. So there's something out of sequence in one of the checklists, which really irritated me.
Yeah, I've found that with comic events like this, I just rely on fan-made reading lists that are posted online, because you never know when the thing that was actually printed in the comic is wrong, whether the thing that is telling you on the comic publisher's website is wrong. But for the purpose of this, we only strictly had to, according to Chairman Snell's instructions, read the Edge of Spider-Verse 5-issue miniseries and then the main Amazing Spider-Man numbered parts of the event. But even then, if you were to read it that way, which I think is in the cheaper trade paperback version of things, you would miss the backup story. And I think it was Amazing Spider-Man 9 that sets up Spider-Girl from the Marvel Comics 2 universe's tragic entrance to the event, and she just shows up talking about how everybody she's ever loved has been killed.
Right, because they kill Peter Parker and maybe her mom, and she and her little brother
and her boyfriend
have to flee. Yeah, exactly right. Also, we didn't read the Spider-Woman issues where Spider-Woman and Silk, who is another alternate spider that doesn't get talked about as much, but they're going to make a Silk movie.
Silk is awesome.
And Silk
and
is awesome.
She's really important to a lot of the stuff that happens.
Mm-hmm. It is funny. There's actually more Silk than Miles Morales in this storyline, which is also surprising. And that's a character that isn't in the Spider-Verse movie, but is a cool character and that with a cool premise. And it's like another take on what I said earlier about what if the spider meant to bite Peter. This is what if somebody else was also bitten by that spider on the same day, and that's Silk's origin, is she was also at the lab, also got bitten, and then something weird about her parents walling her up locking her up in a room for several years,
because
which is weird.
some crazy wild haired guy was like, oh, these multi-dimensional vampires are going to hunt her, we need to lock her in a bunker.
No, it's what if Kimmy Schmidt was Spider Woman? Yeah, basically. That's what it is.
Yeah. Korean American Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, I had heard of Silk. I found this a little disappointing as an introduction point for Silk, because like the first scene is basically like, what if Spider-Man was super horny for Spider-Man, because I did not love that as an introduction to a new character. I know she has her own title, and I had not done my homework as far as that goes, but I thought that was potentially unfortunate for new readers as an introduction to a character that's supposed to be pretty cool.
It was unfortunately girlfriending of a character that her creation came out of the original Sin event, where they had to come up with a bunch of like deep hidden secrets that had never been revealed, and in coming up with something to appease the needs of a crossover, I gather, I didn't get this directly directly from Dan Slott or something, but I've inferred that he kind of found a silver lining to a cloud of, oh, great, I've got to do a thing for an event. And then he went, oh, wait, this would actually work really well for this thing that I'm setting up. But if this event is the way that people are introduced to her, it's not a great first meeting.
Yeah, there's a lot better stuff with her in a lot of these side stories. Again, stuff that's not necessarily in the main sequence of things. Yeah. But there's a more interesting stuff with her. And I would say her and I really kind of found interesting the take in the, you know, we talked about Gwen being one of the breakout characters and the rapport between her and a lot of the other spider people, including, you know, our Peter Parker, our main Peter Parker hero. There's like one point where he like doesn't want to let her go do something, essentially.
Yes.
And that, you know, looks crappy, but they kind of run it back circle, you know, like it's specifically called upon later. Like, you know what? That was a dick move. Like,
yeah,
you can clearly take care of yourself. I am screwed up because of what happened to you in my timeline, but I should not enforce that.
I believe she points out, I am also screwed up because of what happened to you in my timeline.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was a nice way of giving that character a lot more, you know, agency, and especially the Gwen Stacy character, since she's so famously offed.
What they did with Silk was a little side eyeing, but the one down part of the entire Spider-Verse crossover here was that I had to read Edge of Spider-Verse issue number 4. And
the horror movie.
Oh, when, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a weird one.
That was an experience. Thanks for signing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Listeners, if you have not read Spider-Verse before, you can skip Edge of Spider-Verse 4 entirely. There is no crossover, and it is affecting. It is irredeemable.
It is affecting.
It's a horror comic.
I'm going to take some of that with me forever. Sorry, I'm not a fan of horror, and it is horror.
It's straight up.
I think it is very successful at what it does. I just do not care for that.
It is the story in the anthology book that you go, oh, I can tell where this one's going. I'm going to skip to the next story anthology.
I felt like I could tell where it was going, and it still went like several notches beyond that. It was it's pretty gruesome. Yeah,
the real reason to read that miniseries, I think, is you get the introduction of Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, I would. And you know, you get the hard copy.
And Penny Parker, too.
Yeah. The hard copy of it has Gwen Stacy on the cover as Spider-Gwen. And I just felt, I'm like, there must be a lot of people who are buying this trade. And then they read that story, and those people are not happy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in the first issue, you have Spider-Man Noir reintroduced. You have Spider-Gwen in the second. You have Aaron Aikman, the armored Spider-Man, who I think people mostly know because the costume was added to the PS4 Spider-Man game. Then you have the fourth one, which shall not be named. And then the fifth one is the Penny Parker one, which I gather that Marvel was kind of expecting that one, because it was written by Gerard Way, to take off like crazy, the way they kind of expected Spider-Gwen to. And then Spider-Gwen stole all of the thunder of all of it. And Penny Parker really, until the Spider-Verse movie, has not gotten much play or much recognition as something cool, something neat, something that's a fan favorite. She exploded in popularity, I would say, solely from the movie.
From the movie, yeah. I agree. Yeah. I remember when I read about the movie and which, so the movie chooses which alternate spiders, and they choose a, you know, sort of sad dad bod Peter Parker. We've already established that in our episode about Into the Spider-Verse. And we've got Spider-Ham, and we've got, you know, Miles obviously is the main character in that.
Spider-Man Noir.
Gwen, Spider-Man Noir, and Penny Parker. And I remember reading that and thinking, wow, of all of the ones to choose, it's really interesting that they chose it. And when I see her in it, not only is that a fun character, but the fact that it allows them to do a different animation style for her, idea that it is such a different character because she's got the robot, the giant robot on top of it.
They get some great tonal contrast.
I really understand. And it is great, but it's funny because there are so many alternate spiders to choose from. It's interesting that they chose her, even though she didn't break through like maybe people thought. But
the weird thing is both her story and the Aaron Aikman Armored Spider-Man thing, they're both different versions of kind of manga tropey style of manga stories.
Oh, yeah.
And hers is very much like Spider Genesis Evangelion.
Yes. Yes.
And like they're delightful. I mean, there are references to Akira and Ghost in the Shell and just little throwaway stuff that are in the corner of panels. And one of them is really obvious where you see Kaneda's back with his jacket in a big fight scene. But it's something that reading it at the time, I was like, oh, this is fine. And then rereading it, I enjoyed it a lot more.
I liked also that there were, this is kind of in the elsewhere in the series, but there's like, they keep talking about it, like there's, wow, they're actually, we went to Japan a lot. Cause like there's the live action Japanese Spider-Man with the giant robot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's the manga version Spider-Man J or something. I had to look him up, but like, and there's like two or three other different Japanese Spider-Man, which was kind of awesome.
Yeah. Two different animated Spider-Man and one of them being Supaidaman with leopard on, which was one of my favorite. Like, I did not think they would do that. Okay. All right. All bets are off.
I just wanted my 1990s Fox Spider-Man, but no, he does not appear.
That's
you got you did get the Marvel versus Capcom one who was killed in a page.
Yes, that's right.
There's a lot. I mean, this is one of the things that delights me. So one of the things that I enjoyed about this miniseries, and it is a comic book event, right? So it is sprawling and it doesn't fit. What I like about it is that there is a mainline story that only goes on for, what, 7 or 8 issues, which is really great because so many of these comic events you have to have. Yes,
long.
You can buy like 30 issues of Spider-Verse tie-ins, but like there is a main storyline in one comic book. Not these ones where you have to hop around from like this book to this book to this book and all that. So it is pretty restrained. It is still huge and ridiculous, but one of the things I enjoy about it is they had no qualms about these just tossing in these characters.
Yes.
And killing them horribly generally.
Yeah.
You also don't need to know if they're real or not. Like, I don't need to know. Please don't tell me if Spider-Man who drives a talking dune buggy is real or not. I don't need to know that. I'm just happy he's there.
Spider-Man was the dune buggy.
Oh.
He was speed buggy Spider-Man. That was hilarious.
I think I was confused because there was another Spider-Man driving the dune buggy. So.
Oh, he says he's not driving though at one point.
I know. I saw. Which is exactly what a talking dune buggy would say.
The dune buggy's in the movie too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it doesn't talk in the movie, but it's in there.
There's a cosmic Spider-Man in
yes.
this. Which is from, and if you were waiting for the reference to the Micronauts in this episode, you found it. This is the Cosmic Spider-Man who became Captain Universe. That's a Micronauts character.
Well, thank you, Baron Snelza.
Yeah. It's when he got introduced, I'm like, oh, this guy's going to be a really big deal.
Right,
he's
right.
going to hang around
it's
for
such
a while.
Great setup. Behold, I have the power of a god. I shall protect all the spiders here. And they kill him. Like, boom, he's dead. It's like, oh, okay. That was pretty great. I mean, that's...
Yes, you were a tasty snack. Thank you.
You know what? I thought that was really
when
well
there's
done.
An infinite number of characters... The beauty of it is they can kill anybody at any time and do, and there's something delightful about that. Like, oh, we can raise the stakes whenever we want because it doesn't matter.
Especially because the powers of the villains are not super well defined. I mean, they're basically just very strong and powerful and also can clone themselves when they die. That's inconvenient.
Yeah, they're basically Shang Tsung's one fatality from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, but like, I mean, they don't seem to have any kind of, you know, we don't see them flying or anything like that. They don't have super speed. They're just very, very tough. So, you know, killing somebody with godlike powers with your bare hands, that's a good way of establishing how tough you are.
I was also delighted to find, I mean, as someone who read, I probably have a few issues somewhere in a box, Spider-Man 2099 back in the original incarnation when that kicked off. I guess I didn't realize like how big a character he had come back and been such a major character because he plays a big part in this. And he is briefly in the movie.
Is Spider-Man called Spider-Man 2099 called Spider-Man 2099?
I think he's just called Spider-Man.
Well, okay, that makes sense to me.
He's just Spider-Man of 2099.
Yes, Tony 2019.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Jason Snell, 2019.
There's actually a throwaway joke to at one point Peter calls him 2099 and Superior says, are you referring to him as the entire year?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's Lady Spider.
Oh, it was that. Lady Spider.
Not Spider Lady.
Steampunk.
Lady Spider. Yes.
Lady Spider.
One of my favorites. At some point, I hope we can go through our list of favorite spiders, because there are a lot of them.
Yeah. Is this a draft, Jason?
this is not a draft, but that was basically where I was going to go next, is talk about favorite alt. Because really, so this episode is about, we read this Spider-Verse thing, we saw the Spider-Verse movie. It turns out that Spider-Man is a much more malleable character than maybe was initially thought. There are lots of fun alternate spiders, and so then the next step is, do you have favorites that you want to call out? Because there are a lot of them, and they're very fun. So Chip, go ahead, share with us your feelings.
Lady Spider, who is dismissed by the inheritors as not being sufficiently totemish enough. Apparently she got bitten by a spider and it was just an ordinary spider. But she's steampunky, she's got Waldo arms, she's got web fluid, she's got attitude, she's a Victorian adventuress. I'm a big fan. I really enjoy Jessica Drew in these stories. Spider-Woman. I did read the whole damn thing. Every last bit of it.
Same tip.
And Spider-Woman is a great character. I really liked her when she was made part of the New Avengers under Bendis, and coming back, the character is just as confident and cool as ever.
I like Jessica Drew a lot. My only thing is I hate that outfit, and I like the one that they replace it with later.
She's much cooler. She basically gets the new outfit just after this series ended.
But I like her a lot in her stuff in like Secret Avengers and stuff, and having the spy angle, obviously, big mm-hmm. winner for me. I will also add, I like Spider-Man India. He doesn't get a lot of time. He gets like a couple of different panels at a few different points, but I enjoy where he has like a crisis at one point where he's like, I don't know, like I get the feeling like maybe I'm not the real Spider-Man, and he has to get like a whole talk about like, no, you're just as real as anybody else. Like maybe Peter Parker is just like a pale imitation of you. And I don't know. I kind of dig it. It's a cool costume.
No,
design.
He's the one main one. He's the chosen one.
he's the only one.
Yeah, and that's a case of an existing character, because that's a character that was created by Marvel Comics for the Indian comics market. And so they picked that character up and put him into the multiverse, which is pretty cool. Because, yeah, he was just meant to be, what if we did an Indian version of Spider-Man? And then now here he is interacting with everybody else.
I have a list of various ones that got murdered unceremoniously just because I love that they were able to go like Arachnosaur.
Is this the bring out your dead round?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, technically. We're kind of bringing out all the dead. Arachnosaur was terrific. I dug that that we got Assassin Spider-Man. We kind of got a moment that to me paralleled the bit in the Infinity Gauntlet where. And now my mind's blanking, but it was okay. Wolverine, Hulk, you guys will actually kill Thanos if we need to kill him. We get that kind of moment where Superior Spider-Man is kind of figuring out who his assassins are going to be. And he has effectively no jokey, Deadpool Spider-Man, right there at his side, in lockstep with him, which I thought was good to have that polar of a different iteration of Peter
that
Parker.
That is one of my favorite lines in the entire event, is the when one of the Spider-Man is like, why do your web slingers shoot bullets? And he's like, better question, why don't yours?
The Cyborg Spider-Man felt like hold on, let's go back to after Superman died, those different variations of Superman. Right. Let's pick one of those things. I thought that was neat just because, you know, I like cyborg stuff. Spider-Moon Man was cool, not because of the design, but because it was one of those kind of, to me, signature Dan Slott things of, you know exactly where you are and what's going on. Last panel reveal, no, you don't. You're on the moon. You were on the moon the whole time. For me, the one that I hope shows up in the Spider-Verse sequel the most, because I like the idea of the buddy cop shenanigans with Spider-Ham, is Spider-Monkey. Because spiders, Spider-Man and monkeys, two of my favorite things, mm-hmm. Right in the same place. the Bruce Banner, but who wasn't the Hulk Spider-Man who gets killed, was from a miniseries called Bullet Points that was really good. And I enjoyed his inclusion, if anything, because I have this weird affection for Marvel Comics miniseries that nobody read and nobody remembers. Because sometimes there's just amazingly good writing, amazingly good art in these things. And it's some of the stuff that I find on Marvel Unlimited and I go, oh, okay, cool. It's not like they've even reprinted that, so I wouldn't have found that anywhere else. Golden Sponge Cake Spider-Man, I mentioned earlier. But that to me sums up the whole notion of everything that they could put in. Spider-Wolf, a reference to Cap Wolf, from an unjustly maligned run of Captain America by Mark Gruenwald, where they turned Captain America into a werewolf. So instead it was that Spider-Man became a werewolf.
It's also kind of cool that a couple of them, there's a couple throwaway scenes where there's a scene where Jessica walks into the room with the web in the Loom world, and there's just like little pictures, like one pictures of all the different universes, and a bunch that are not even spider people that we meet, but some of them are crazy. Like there's a cowboy Spider-Man who shows up at one point. But there's other ones in there who just don't even I think maybe show up in the background in one or two panels, and you're like, wait, there's a Spider-Man with a weird hat, or what's up with that?
Iron Fist Spider-Man.
Iron Fist Spider-Man's in there.
I have a lot of questions about how Earth One works, because it seems like a garbage place.
why pirates? Why pirates? Yeah. I never understood the pirates.
Also, I loved that the headquarters in Loom World, there's a giant edifice outside, and as soon as I saw it, I'm like, that's the monument in Rome to the founder of the first king of the unified Italy. It's just essentially just pulled from that. It's literally that. It's very funny.
I like that all of Spider-Man's villains / secondary characters are their servants in their palace for some reason.
What are you going to do? I wanted to put a word in. We mentioned her earlier. I really liked that Spider-Girl series. One of the things that was great about it is that it was like reading something that fell through a time warp, because they were all standalone stories, super compressed in an era of story arcs and decompression. It was very old school, and it was fun and really one of the early examples of what if we did had a female character as a superhero, where there were many of those later about the gender flipping Marvel heroes and things like that. And it was she was Spider-Man's daughter and had inherited his powers, and he was retired and I think lost a leg and couldn't be Spider-Man anymore, and so Mayday Parker did it, and she ends up spending time
that was such a fun happy-go-lucky series that they had there.
It was until they killed everybody and brought her into this series. But she spends some time with Jessica Drew and with Silk, and it's fun to see that character again, because that character was basically put on a shelf. And one of the things that this series has done is, there are lots of women spiders in here. Jessica Drew, mentioning her too, that was such a weird character where when she was introduced in the 70s, it was very much she's called Spider-Woman, but she's not really related to Spider-Man in any way, which I always thought was kind of strange, but that was kind of what they did with it. And seeing her in this event is kind of nice, because it's finally just admitting, yes, you're part of the family. You are part of the Spider family after all, which is kind of nice. So I liked that whole thing with Jessica Drew and Silk and Mayday Parker. And they went on, I should say, the thing that... ongoing, I mean, it's over now, but an ongoing series they did that I actually really liked was Web Warriors, which was basically a Spider-Verse ongoing where a team of alternate spider people patrol the multiverse and are sent on missions. And so it's a little bit like Exiles, which is a comic I like, where there are alternate X-Men who go through the multiverse. It spun out of this.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason.
And Web Warriors was a pretty good series that ran for a year or so.
It was even pre-shouted out by the young spider team driving the dune buggy, trying to make Fetch a thing, as it were. But with, Web Warriors, that's a terrible name. I like it.
It's going to grow on you.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds a little bit like I don't even know what, a very weird Saturday morning cartoon, but it's But it was a good...
I think I watched that.
It was a good comic series, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, coming out of it, when they said they were naming that series Web Warriors, I was like, they could just call it Spider-Verse. Not like that has a lot of brand traction, you know, coming out of an event, but that's kind of what it is. Not like they're going to use it for something else.
Yeah.
And now, especially after the movie, I'm like, why don't they just have a series that's called Spider-Verse? Because it would sell.
That teams up the characters from Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, just right? Make it like in the style of the Walmart 100-page giants that feature a chunk of reprints along with news stories that are being sold by DC. Do something like that. You know, print a 100-page giant-sized Spider-Man comic that kids see at the grocery checkout that just has Spider-Verse written on it, and sell them. Sell millions of them.
One of the things, now that you are all indoctrinated into the world of alternate spiders, I'm curious if you have any thoughts about where you would like to see the animated franchise go from here. There's obviously going to be an Into the Spider-Verse sequel. In fact, there's going to be also a spinoff. So there are going to be at least two movies that Sony's going to put out. But do you have any thoughts, like, if they were to, are there spiders? Are there alternate spiders that you were introduced to here that you would love to see more of in an animated, you know, Spider-Verse spinoff or sequel?
I think Spider UK would work better in an animated form than he would here.
Spider-Punk would be fun tonally too, you know, although it's hard because a lot of these are spiders that we see murdered brutally. Yeah. And I don't want to see a movie that's just spiders getting murdered brutally for like 90 minutes.
Certainly not.
I mean, going back to Incomparable 439, one of our greatest, most classic episodes, mm-hmm. Dad Bod Spider-Man, you know, we made mention of the fact that Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099, shows up right at the end.
Right.
And one of my questions about that movie was, wait, are they doing a reduced version of the actual Spider-Verse story the way that they've done recently in one of the TV animated series, or is this effectively a different take on Edge of Spider-Verse leading into an actual tons and tons more spider people?
Right, it could be a prequel to an actual Spider-Verse thing that's more like what we read.
You wouldn't have to do it with all the inheritors either, because it's not the strongest.
It does not port well. Yeah.
No.
I don't look at that and see like that we need to see that on the big screen. Yeah. We need to see them eating Spider-Man 83.
The existing Spider-Verse movie, you know, it kills a Spider-Man very early on. So I think killing alternate spider people isn't going to be off the table. And it honestly feels like that post-credits tag was set up for, we're going to go even crazier.
I agree. I just hope it's not, for some reason, the body count in this comic series doesn't bother me as much as a similar body count in an Into the Spider-Verse style movie probably would. There's a real tonal shift, especially if you read all the tie-ins. You know, some of the Spider-Verse tie-in books are just hilarious. The crossovers with 1967 Wallop and Web Snappers, Spider-Man and stuff, you know. And then you flip to the next story and somebody's getting killed brutally. There's tonal variation all over the place. I don't feel like a Spider-Verse with a big body count would work real well as a movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think tonally you wouldn't want to see that in a movie, but you could definitely have characters not make it and like they did. I mean, honestly, I was surprised in that episode I talked about it that I'm surprised that they went to all the way with killing Spider-Man. I mean, they do it kind of off screen, but he is most definitely horribly murdered by the Green Goblin. So we'd see more of that for stakes raising, but not to the degree as the comics.
Maybe they would focus just on Morlun as this, you know, force hunting spiders across dimensions and not the family. I mean, I thought that was cut, again, not something I had read before, and that was interesting, but that would be a lot to inject into a movie, is that there's not just a villain, there's a family of vampire villains. Let's find out about their infighting.
You only need the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the setup of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and you don't need the Spider-Man Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's also kind of like in the comic series, there's a bit of a bait and switch, right? Because we start with Karn, who's like hunting down all these people, and you're like, oh, this dude's really scary. And it's like, No, he's like the least scary one of all of them. And in fact, he's actually not that bad. He's your friend. He's a good guy. You know,
like, he's just a good guy who's murdered lots of your friends.
Right. So in some ways, it's scarier to have like one unstoppable force than, again, dilution. And the same thing with killing off a bunch of Spider-Man. I think the more that you kill off, the less impact it ends up having, because it starts to feel a little bit like,
or do you make the villain a evil Spider-Man who's traveling?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking is a better fit.
The Victorian space vampires, there's not, I mean, yeah,
it's, I don't think more of that. For as ridiculous as they are, that's part of why I like their design, because they're so ill-fitting and ridiculous. And I don't know, like, I am open-minded to the notion of even, I think there is probably a palatable version of Karn being the bad guy that they turn against the tide, with the horrible sinister family, you know, fighting against stuff. But that length of story almost feels like it's something they would have to do in an animated series and not just a movie. So I could totally see them just going with only, or maybe just Moreland and Karn, and not involving the rest of the Adams family of murder vampires.
I would like them, and maybe they'd workshop what their motivation is, because it's weird.
I'm hungry.
Yes. I hunger for spiders. But also, if you were to lock me in a vault where I would just eat spiders, I would make do.
I wonder if they could do some interesting things with the Superior Spider-Man as the villain of such a story. Superior Spider-Man is actually one of the most compelling characters in this comic, I think. This was my introduction to him. I knew he existed, but watching Otto's mind at work and moments where he's the one who breaks through to Spider-Bin in the bunker when Peter Parker can't, you know, that turns out that he's a interesting, complex character, and bringing him into a Spider-Verse movie as an antagonist might be a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, that bit of character growth is something that, coming from reading the two or three episode or issues of Amazing Spider-Man that led into the Superior series and the whole Superior series, it's a really interesting character development thing, because that Superior series is all about how, obviously, Otto Octavius is not good enough to be Spider-Man, but could he grow and change enough to find the good inside of him?
Successful enough that they brought it back, and there is now, simultaneously with a regular Spider-Man series, a Superior Spider-Man series. Yeah, so I don't know. They're definitely making they're developing a Spider-Woman, Silk, Spider-Gwen movie, as well as the Into the Spider-Verse thing. I love the idea of an alternate, like, Superior Spider-Man type who they think is one of them but ends up actually being bad would be an interesting way to go. I would definitely like to see more. I mean, you mentioned it's like the Spider-Punk or the Spider-UK. There are interesting things to be done there. Spider-Ham, that's the other thing. Spider-Ham, one of the longest running alternate spiders, but so ridiculous that you couldn't ever possibly put that character in a movie, right? And it turns out that was a huge success and just is so well done. So I think that what that says is that there is no alternate spider character too ridiculous or too strange to be put in an animated movie. I think more what you want is you want diversity of characters so that they are all different enough that you don't have two that are basically the same. That's one of the nice things about Into the Spider-Verse is all the characters are different. Like, you can tell them apart. And I think, especially in a movie with a general audience, the last thing you'd want is to have a slightly different to another one of the core characters spider, because then you're like, which one is this?
Even in costumes would not be good, right?
Well, like Mayday Parker, I love, but I'm not sure you really want to do Mayday Parker and Spider-Gwen together, because it's like two teen girls. It's like, I mean, you could visually vary them a little bit, but it's like Penny Parker is very different, right? And she's got her robot, and so she's very different. But I would go diversity of spiders over more Peter Parkers, right?
To me, like, in the female female spinoff, I don't see why she couldn't be rolling six or seven ladies deep. I mean, you could have Penny Parker in there. You could have Spider-Girl in there. You could have Anya Corazon, Spider-Girl in there.
They just got to look. They got to be differentiated. You just got to be sure to differentiate themselves.
Yeah.
So they can be different.
And one of the things that I like about the comic miniseries is that they're very good at differentiation for the characters that actually get speaking lines and actually get a role in things. I think that's really the key. A minor correction in stream. I said that it was a Superior Octopus series. There's a Superior Octopus miniseries, and then they launched a new Superior Spider-Man proper series.
That's what I was
in December.
Talking about.
And it's all very confusing. There's like a Symbiote Spider-Man miniseries. They're like 17 different Spider-Man comics out there.
Marketing. Merchandising.
One last thought. Going back to my earlier statement, you know, whatever they do with future Spider-Verse movies, the character that was served, I think, the poorest in this comic series needs to still be front and center in the movies, and that's Miles.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, it honestly, Miles didn't need to be part of the Spider-Verse comic series as much because it was an amazing Spider-Man event and he's in it, but like Miles is already established as the other Spider-Man, so established that he doesn't need to get pumped up in the comic series.
And they're aware of it.
But
I mean, there's
the
scene at the end where he's like, I wish we had talked more before I jumped through this portal. Yeah. And Spider-Man's like, yeah, it's cool. We'll hang out. We'll never hang out.
So it's like in a function, I think, of his place in the comics that he doesn't need to be dominant here because he and Peter Parker can team up whenever they want, essentially, at this point. But in the movies, you know, that's why they put him front and center. And I'm sure that he'll stay there. I honestly, the other thing, my wish list item for a sequel to Into the Spider-Verse is I would love something that they did in the Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions video game, which is sort of a precursor to this because Dan Slott wrote that too. And that's where he got the idea he was like, I'd like to do this as a comic sometime. is I would love to see more references to old Spider-Man animated characters. So in the post-credit sequence, they go to Spider-Man 67, but I would love some more stunt, like even if it's just cameos from the voice actors who are still around who portrayed other versions, so Dan can get his 90s animated Spider-Man.
I can tell Dan with absolute certainty that Christopher Daniel Barnes is very much up for doing exactly that.
Well, he's in the Shattered Dimensions game, right?
Yes, exactly. As is Neil Patrick Harris, is the guy who played the
Josh Keaton
80s Spider-Man
Josh
and the
Keaton's
67
so
Spider-Man, yeah.
Yeah, both Josh Keaton and Chris Barnes have both. I have been in their presence as they have said that they would be 1,000% up for it and would die to do it. There's so much possibility of doing as crazily far as they went with animation styles and marrying different animation styles in the first one. That I'm with you. Like that's my number one draft pick thing for the follow up is just keep pushing the bar and keep celebrating animation history. And even the thing that I want as my sub point within that top pick is I want them to just completely invent animated Spider-Man stuff that has never been done.
Yes.
Like do a Max Fleischer style Spider-Man that never got made.
Yeah.
Do something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Spider-Noir is a great example, right? Where it's like of a style that did not exist when it was before, it predates Spider-Man, but it is this idea of what would a Spider-Man be in that genre. And it's very clever. And Nicolas Cage.
I want them to cast Colin Firth as Spider-Man 1602. You know, just because, you know,
I think
something
Spider-Man
like
313, I think is what they refer to him technically.
Tony.
Technical.
Excuse me.
Would you like to put some glasses up on your forehead?
Apparently that did not transfer over the mic, but I did.
My apology, Professor Sindelar. Don't you teach at Batman University?
We have
visiting professor.
Tony, how many alternate Batmen are there?
There's a bunch, not as many.
All right.
Clearly. Not enough.
there's not a collection where somebody murders 100 of them. You know why? Can't murder alternate Batman.
Batman,
boom.
That many Batman. No, I'm sure that there will be an Into the Batverse animated series soon.
I've buried 14 Batman.
I mean, Lego Batman is kind of Lego Batman kind of does that, right?
Yes.
With all the different like costumes and incarnations that they've had.
Jason, there's plenty of Batman.
Oh, hold on. I've got to correct something Tony said there, which is,
Oh no.
I'm not burying another alternate Batman. I buried 14 different timelines of Batman.
That's Bruce.
I don't think that's a correction.
No, it's not. I'm just, I was going with it.
Jason, you know what it is?
It's the only explanation.
Jason.
Reference acknowledged. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I've just hit up the Wikipedia entry for alternative versions of Batman. It's kind of long.
Anyway, what I'm saying is in Micronauts number 8, Captain Universe was introduced. Moises,
in conclusion,
yes.
Jason, in the interest of making recommendations about follow-up related things,
thank you.
There has been a follow-up to the Spider-Verse comic series called Spider-Geddon, mm-hmm. authored by Christos Gage, who Dan Slott gets a great deal of very rightful credit for his run on Amazing Spider-Man and overseeing the Spider-Verse, as it were. But you'll find that in the tie-in books for Spider-Verse, as well as various issues throughout Dan's run, Christos Gage did a lot of co-writing work with him, and he the fabric of the Spider-Verse, he deserves a great deal of credit that I don't think he necessarily has gotten the way that Bendis has for Miles and Dan for auteuring the Spider-Verse world. I haven't read any of Spider-Geddon, but it's a direct continuation of the whole Inheritor saga after they're left on the Poison Planet in Spider-Verse. This picks up on all of that with all of our favorites, Spider-Man India, Spider-Punk, the various Spider-Women, the various Spider-Girls, the various Scarlet's Spider, Superior Spider-Man, Superior
Attorney General.
there's an Edge of Spider-Geddon, and I think as of this recording, all of the trades for the tie-ins for the main event and all that kind of stuff are now out.
It's fun. So many Spider-Men. It's good. It makes me happy. I think it's a fun... You know, Spider-Man's obviously my favorite. Whoever decided to get the rights to Spider-Man and put them in the Electric Company did me a solid, because then I fell in love with Spider-Man and been ever since. But I love these other takes on them, and I love the fact that they can tell these stories. Bottom line, like I said earlier, it's just fun to have people who have interesting stories to tell about Spider-Man or somebody kind of like him that I haven't seen before.
I just hope that we eventually get to see Spider-Man as a podcaster.
Yeah. Oh boy, that would be a really good little bit, wouldn't it? Like the Spider-Cast.
This episode of the Spider-Cast brought to you by schmamps.com.
Too many spiders, they'd be talking all over each other.
Actually, Moises, I think you'll find the Spider-Cast is a true crime podcast put out by the Daily Bugle, which dramatizes all of Spider-Man's crimes.
And hosted by Betty Brant.
And J. Jonah Jameson appears. Actually, he just appears at the beginning. This is J. Jonah Jameson of the Daily Bugle. Enjoy this podcast.
He's not on mic, but he's so loud that you can't escape him.
Miss Brant,
get me pictures of Spider-Man!
Yeah, that's it.
There's a whole series of spin-off podcasts where people criticize Betty Brant for maybe getting too close to her subject and being too sympathetic to him and falling in love with the Spider-Man.
I think it's called Threat or Menace, a Spider-Man podcast. Yeah, that's good. I'm glad we solved it. We're just workshopping here. Everybody,
all those ideas are free.
Free.
All those ideas are free.
All right.
Does whatever a spider cast can.
Yep. Oh, Dan, I think it's time to go.
I might need some work.
That was a bad sign. Bad sign. All right. Thank you to my fellow spider people, I guess. Chip Sutter, thank you.
Looks to camera. Boy, Jason really is a hard ass running this podcast. He reminds me of Nick Fury. Other character. Who's he talking to?
Moises Chulion, thank you.
Ascots aren't a thing anymore.
Dan Morin, thank you.
With great power must also come great responsibility. Subtle difference.
Tony Sindelar, I am glad to have been caught in your web for the last hour.
Spider, goodbye.
It's not how that works.
Nope, that's the traditional way you say goodbye if you're a Spider-Man, trust me.
If you're a spider person, yeah. Yes, that's right. Well, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then, in that case, I've been your host, Jason Snell. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Incomparable, and a spider goodbye to all of you.
Canon.